Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. DJ Brown and Ricky Slade into the transfer portal. We'll hear from James Franklin in a few moments. First of all, our play-by-play call today, another James Harden step back.
Harden, step back, fires, hits. Oh, you can always count on James Harden to hit a big three-pointer in the fourth quarter. This was big as the Rockets take their biggest lead of the game on a 7-2 run.
Indeed, and that Harden step back. 125-110 last night. The Rockets won it. 40 for Harden last night. He also dished off 12 assists. You seem disappointed about Chris Bryant. I mean, Bob Nightingale and I are not endorsers of Chris Bryant. You seem disappointed.
Who, me?
Yeah,
I'm in agreement. I think Chris Bryant would be a wrong move for the Phillies.
An hour ago, you weren't. No, I'm just kidding.
They got to be all on the pitching, man.
All right, James Franklin met with the media today, and here's some of the items, especially when it comes to the coaching staff, he discussed.
You've talked a lot about the importance of the personality fits of your assistant coaches, and I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about the personalities of the three new coaches, since we really haven't had a chance to talk to them, and how have things meshed in this first month or so with these guys?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. So you go through the interview process, and trying to kind of do your own research, then interview a guy, and either he kind of moves up your list or goes down your list based on that. And then you have the hire. And then what happens is, you know, the time that we hired, you know, you're on the road, you know, with these guys, seeing how they interact. I have all my guys, once we hire them, I have all my guys, if we have the ability to still go visit, the homes and the schools of all of our new players. But then I also think it's really important that they call all the parents of our current players to introduce themselves, and that relationship is critical. So we're all working to pour our hearts and souls into these young men. So, so far, so good. I've gotten great feedback from all the parents. I've gotten great feedback from our current players, and the same thing with our coaches. And what I always try to do as well is, sometimes I think it frustrates you guys sometimes, but I want more times than not for our current players and for our parents and for our recruits to hear it from me before they hear it from somebody else. So, okay, we obviously knew about Sean leaving before anybody else, but how do I get that information to all of our players so it doesn't break on the internet before they've heard it from me and Sean? I think that's really important. And then the same thing when we hire someone, that hopefully that person can call all of the commitments and talk to our players before it's announced publicly. I just think, you know, that's family business, and you'd love for it to be addressed there first. And I don't necessarily feel like the public should be finding out the same time as Shaka. If that makes sense. So we try to do that whenever we can. It's harder than ever in today's society. But so far, so good. You know, so far, so good. You know, but obviously we got to get this D-line one done. You know, I don't see this dragging on very long. We've already started the process and try to finish it up here, sooner rather than later.
What went into the decision to not renew Matt Limegrover's contract, and then what made Phil Troutwine such a candidate you wanted to get and obviously did lock up?
Yeah, you know, I'd like to really kind of focus on kind of moving forward. obviously we're very appreciative of the time that we had, and Coach did a great job. His family's awesome, all those types of things. But I felt like a change was needed for a number of reasons that I don't know if are necessarily appropriate in this setting. But Troutwine, it was on the list of guys that I was tracking. There's people that I know very well in this business that think very highly of him. And then what we try to do is I kind of have my list. Then I talk to people, and that's kind of the old way to interview is you interview them, you talk to references. As you guys have heard me say before, I'm not into calling, I'm not into calling your references. Like, you're giving me the names, they're all going to say wonderful things, or you wouldn't give me their names. So I'm going to call people that I know. So that's kind of the process. But then, now I think one of the areas that's changed is being able to study the data. Having Michael Hazel or whoever it may be able to run the numbers and how productive have they been, how productive has the offense been or the O-line has been, how many guys made all-conference, how many guys have gone to the NFL, and then, obviously his story. You talk about a guy that wanted to come to Penn State, didn't get a Penn State offer. From our region, which I don't think is the end-all be-all, but does help. You have a guy from your region, the likelihood of stability increases, where if you hire a guy who's from New Mexico and something in that region opens up and it's closer to home, it makes it more challenging. So that factors in. I think he has a story. I think he's got a story that is attractive to our current players and also to recruits in terms of was not a highly recruited guy, goes to Florida, wins two national championships, starts for multiple years at left tackle, doesn't get drafted, finds a way to play in NFL for 5 years, gets into coaching, trains under a tree, an O-line tree that I respect. And has had success, and then you couple all that with the people that I know and trust, and then watching film, and then studying the data. It just all kind of made sense and aligned, and so far so good. It's like anything else. I mean, you make a decision, and then each day you feel better about your decision, or you don't. And so far, it felt better about all the decisions that we have made daily. And that's seeing them in different settings. That's seeing them around our guys and how our guys respond to them. That's seeing them around our staff and how they interact with our staff. It's all of those things. So I hope that answers your question.
Good afternoon.
Hey, Rich.
You had been very complimentary about the Minnesota game plan back in November, but what exactly did you see in Kirk that made you want to pursue him, and what do you hope that he brings to the offense and to your team?
Well, I think it's a bunch of things. Is you're talking about an experienced guy who's been calling plays and putting offenses together for a long time. Won a national championship at the University of Delaware. Obviously, has been kind of in two rebuilds now in Western Michigan and Minnesota. Is from Pennsylvania. Some of my closest friends in the profession are his closest friends. We really didn't know each other that well, but my college roommate Mike Santella at East Stroudsburg, they worked together at University of Pennsylvania. Dave Brock, who worked for me at K-State and is now in the NFL, Atlanta Falcons, is one of his close friends. So we were both able kind of to talk. He was able to talk to them. I was able to talk to them, kind of see if it made sense for each other, being from Pennsylvania. And then obviously firsthand, being able to watch the Minnesota offense, go this year. I think that helped too. And then it's about fit. You get together with some people. And what I don't think we need is we've been fairly successful over the last number of years and with different coordinators. So I don't feel like we need to go hire someone, blow it up, and start all over. So do we have someone that's experienced enough and has enough humility that will come in and say, okay, I'm secure enough and comfortable enough that this is how I do things. And there's core beliefs that I'm not willing to budge on. But here's other things where I'm smart enough and I've been in the business long enough, the areas where I can learn it and take some of the learning off the players will do that. So finding somebody that says, okay, I'm really good at what I do, but also have enough flexibility that I'm not just going to come in and blow everything up and start all over when that's not where we're at as a program, if that makes sense. So finding somebody that kind of was open to all those things, someone that I was going to be comfortable with, someone I thought was going to be comfortable with me, and I think it was going to be a good fit, for our players, I think you guys will enjoy getting to know all these guys. We talked about creating some more opportunities for you guys to spend more time around the staff, which is some of the discussions that we've had with you guys. I think you guys will be impressed, and I think you'll like what you see, not only on the field when it comes to production, but just as a guy in this community, which is also something that's important to us.
This is a recruiting question. Obviously you sign an entire class in December. What do you think are the pros and cons of that early signing day? And do you, I guess, prefer signing an entire class in December, or would you rather have it more fleshed out? And
yeah, I think, the hard part always is you could make the arguments that you save a few because you never know it's going to show up with in the transfer situation. A guy that may just be available late that you weren't anticipating. We had some people calling us late. That you would have loved to have had, a few more scholarships, but not necessarily holding any, just you wish you had more scholarships available. Obviously, the way the season ended and things like that, I think, helps. But I think at the end of the day, it's like anything else. We've got a really good prospect that we think can help us win, that we've evaluated thoroughly and is a good fit here. Do you take that now or do you wait for something later? We have taken that approach, but you can make arguments both ways. There's a lot of ways to do it, but we trust our evaluation process. We try to be as thorough as we possibly can. There's a lot of factors that go into it. I think so far so good. We'll always approach the first signing period as the signing period. I think if a guy doesn't sign with you, he's telling you something. You got to be willing to listen to what they're telling you. Words are great. Actions are another. But as you guys know, every year we kind of get done something and we sit down as a staff and say, okay, what did we do well? What can we do better? I think you always should be doing that. You should have a system of checks and balances, and then you should have a kind of a rehash session or whatever you want to talk it after everything. We had a junior day the other day. The next day we come in, and what did we do well? What did we like? What would we do different? That same way we do on Sundays after games. We try to do that in every phase of our program. We'll see. There could be a few tweaks, but I think we're pretty pleased with how the first signing day went. It's made for a beautiful day today. No drama. I think that's the other thing that I like is, for the most part, we don't have a whole lot of drama. On signing day, the guys that are supposed to sign. They're all in. Usually by 8 a.m., we don't release them to you guys publicly because we just want to spread it out throughout the day for content. But we compete in everything we do. So, the first one that comes in, that's a competition, and that coach wins. And whoever gets the last one in, they have to buy the whole staff lunch. So typically they're all in by 9 a.m., and we're kind of relaxing at that point. And celebrating and kind of enjoying it. So we haven't had a whole lot of signing day drama.
Hey, James, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Doing well. In your receiver room, outside of KJ Hamler, each of the past 2 years, no one else averaged more than 2 catches per game. What do you attribute to regarding that lack of production, and what gives you optimism with Taylor coming in that maybe there's going to be an uptick in 2020?
Yeah, we got to be more consistent. That's in throwing the ball and accuracy, that we got to be able to make the defense defend the entire field. One of the things, if you look back with Trace, we did a great job of attacking that wide field comeback a lot, taking that access, which most defenses are going to give you a soft corner to the field and try to take the shorter throws away. That we did a good job.
over the last number of years of attacking with our slots. I think we've done a good job with our tight ends. We got to do a better job getting the ball to our outside receivers. And that is accuracy, that is aggressiveness, that is consistently catching the ball, that is consistently creating separation. It's not one thing. It's a little bit of all of it. But we need more production. There's no doubt about it. So, you know, being more explosive, being more productive. I think at the end of the day, we have to throw and catch for a higher percentage. I think that's the biggest thing that we can do. And that production will create more explosive plays just based on opportunities. So, you know, the good thing is we're running the ball much better than we were probably – you know, 4 or 5 years ago. But for us to go where we want to go, we got to do both at a high level. The exciting thing is there's some really good opportunities for some wide receivers, you know, to come in and compete. And we think we got some guys that are ready to kind of take the next step, and we need them to. You know, that'll be a focus point for the spring and the summer and obviously next fall. And then specifically to Coach Stubblefield, again, you know, a guy that has been a number of places, had a lot of conversations in hiring him about the stability aspect of it. But then on top of that, you know, back to the stability thing, we need stability. The interesting thing is he needs it too. You know, one of the stories that, you know, a lot of people have talked about is he hasn't necessarily shown that in his career. So something that he needs and we both need right now. So I think that helps. And then obviously a guy that, you know, not only has coached it, but also done it himself at a high level. You know, you look what he was able to do in this conference and nationally, pretty impressive. And also a guy that didn't do it, no disrespect to him, based on raw athleticism. You know, he did it on techniques and fundamentals and mentality and understanding and things like that. If you go back and check his testing numbers from his pro day and combine, we're not recruiting Taylor Stubblefield here to Penn State right now. But to me, a guy a little bit like we're talking about with Coach Troutwine, a guy that based on his training and his preparation and his mentality and techniques and fundamentals was able to play at a really, really high level. Now, if you can take the combination of going out and finding some really talented, skilled players and then give them the training of a guy that found a way to be successful without that, you got a recipe for a lot of success. So that's going to be obviously important.
James, during the Cotton Bowl, Sandy Barber had told us to likely expect your contract details in early to mid-January. So I was hoping you could clarify two things. One, I was just curious if you signed the contract yet, and if not, you know, what the delay has been thus far, or maybe when that we can expect that release.
Yeah, you're relentless, by the way, which I like. I respect it. Really, there hasn't been a delay, as you can imagine. These contracts aren't like three pages of notes, so it's about language and making sure what Penn State is comfortable with and what we're comfortable with, and that takes time. So really, I think what Sandy was talking about is there was a verbal agreement made at that time, and then it takes lawyers that get involved and make sure everything is ironed out and both parties are protected and then it's signed. I think that's going to happen soon. But I also know there's some things kind of within Penn State and things like that that I don't kind of know the process. So I don't want to sit here and say a time or a date, but it's agreed upon. And I think it should be here very soon. But that's why. It really was no holdups or concerns or issues on either party. It was just kind of going through all the red tape and the verbiage of contracts like that. Did I was there another part of your question? Or did I answer?
I was just curious to clarify whether it was signed at this point.
No. But it's in a position now, based on all the language cleaned on both sides, that it should be signed soon. But what I don't want to say is when it's going to be signed, and then you guys are wondering why it hasn't been released right away, because I do think there's some things that have to happen procedurally, whether it's state laws or university policies. So I don't want to throw out a number, and then as you get back to your demeanor, which is relentless, you're hammering me and Sandy, where's that at, where's it at, where's it at? So I just don't want to say anything that puts you or Sandy or the university in a tough spot.
Josh took my question.
So anybody else?
No, I got another one. Don't worry.
Got a backup?
I'm wondering if you have any comment. Obviously, there have been two lawsuits have been brought against you and also against the university since we last talked.
I prefer your other question.
I got a third one, too.
Yeah, no. I think we've already released statements on those things. I think we've already the same statement we had before is it covers it as well.
We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Boy, it's great when everything comes together. You have a great product, a great sales staff that is so customer-driven, and a service department that's top-notch. When it all comes together, you've got something special. And that is Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All right. Win for Penn State last night. They've had a series of big wins this year. We talked about the six quad one wins they've had. They've had a series of big wins this season. To this point, that was the signature win of the big wins. To this point. With a lot more to do. Starting with Minnesota Saturday at 4 here. It was a night where the stars were the stars. The two big stars for Michigan State played like it. Cassius Winston, yes, he missed the free throw at the end, but my goodness, he played a brilliant game all the way. They're one of the biggest reasons Michigan State even has a shot at the end is because of how Cassius Winston played. And Xavier Tillman, while not having a big point production night, and again, Mike Watkins kind of bedeviled him a bit inside. Still had 11 rebounds last night and 5 block shots. Oh, my goodness. He blocked some shots last night that were just... There's one Myron Jones went up last night, right? And I think it's going to be an easy play. And we're sitting courtside, and all of a sudden this green-shirted individual goes flying by our faces and blocks the shot. I was like, holy mackerel. Wow. And then there's Penn State. Myron Jones came into the game as Penn State's second leading scorer. He has been all season. And Myron Jones, absolutely under the weather last night. Absolutely under the weather. Nailed 6 of 8 three-pointers. He had 20 last night. It's the sixth time this season he's had 20 points. He's actually had more 20-point games this season than Lamar Stevens has. And Then there's Lamar Stevens. Again, as I said, the stars were the stars last night. Each team's stars came up and did big things last night. Well, Lamar Stevens turned out to be the best player on the floor. He played just an absolutely brilliant game, 39 minutes last night. But this is where, okay, this is where Penn State is in the position with this team, because let's take you back to when Penn State played Indiana at home. Remember what Dick Girardi and I talked about. Indiana, which had beaten Michigan State at home, had then lost a tough one by a point to Maryland at home on that Sunday, then had to play on a Wednesday night against Penn State. It was the third game in 7 days for Indiana, albeit two were at home, but the third game in 7 days. And Dick and I both felt that watch Indiana in the second half to see if playing three games in 7 days has an effect on them. Well, A, Penn State played really well in the second half, and Indiana really faded. They couldn't hit any shots. And in the post game, we again mentioned it was their third game in 7 days. You have to be factually correct with people to let them know, you know, what they're watching and why they're watching it. Well, last night was Penn State's, you know, everybody's asked to do this, so this is not out of the ordinary for anybody. Last night was Penn State's third game in 7 days. With the difference being they played at Nebraska on Saturday night and got back at 2 in the morning Sunday. Everybody was able to get home into their respective homes, sleep in their respective beds. Then Sunday night, able to stay in their homes, apartments, whatever, sleep in their respective beds. And then left Monday for the game last night. Penn State does not have anybody on the team averaging over 30 minutes a game right now. Remember, Lamar Stevens last year is out there cranking out 37 minutes a night. Josh Reeves was cranking out 30-something minutes a night. But Lamar's out there cranking out like 37 minutes a night last season. He's not averaging over 30 minutes a game this year. Penn State has depth. Penn State's also won by some margins, which has really helped. So you don't have to play somebody the last 4 minutes, whatever it may be. So that when you do need to call upon somebody to play 39 minutes like he did last night, and he wasn't the only one that cracked 30 minutes, but he played 39 minutes last night, he had something in the tank because he has had his minutes better regulated this season, because Penn State can regulate the minutes better this season. They have more players. I also feel the other factor that helps is as follows. Let's now go back in time on this show. The number of times you heard me say on this show, Penn State needs to transition to being the older team. I talked last year about Penn State being 312 out of 353 in experience last year. And I said, Penn State needs to transition to being the older team. When Mike Watkins first said he was coming back, then followed by Lamar Stevens, Penn State instantly made the transition to being the older team. And then they added Curtis Jones in there, and that allowed Penn State to transition to being the older team. John Hara became a junior. Jamari Wheeler became a junior. A redshirt sophomore in Isaiah Brockington became eligible. Miles Dredd became a sophomore. And now a guy like Seth Lundy, who's in the starting, and then Myron Jones became a sophomore. Then a guy like Seth Lundy, who 5 years ago in this program, let's just turn the clock back 5 years, he'd be the one playing 37 minutes a game because they'd have to. Now they don't have to. They can start him. He's going well. Keep him going. If he's struggling with a couple of concepts here and there, you can bring somebody in and give him a chance to grow that way. He doesn't have the pressure of carrying the program. It's made a big difference. So that's why Penn State could negotiate 3 games in 7 days with 2 of them on the road back-to-back and down the stretch be fresh last night, because they have enough players now, and they're the older team. Being the older team means you walk into an arena like that and go, so what? That's what it means. You walk into an arena like that because the atmosphere was a 10 last night. 10 out of 10. Awesome atmosphere. And Lamar Stevens looks around, and Curtis Jones looks around, and Mike Watkins looks around. They go, okay, so Jamari Wheeler's a junior. Yeah, okay, that's fine. Done this before. It makes all the difference in the world. Now they got Minnesota. It's another, you know, you just have to keep winning. Have to keep winning. When they went through the tough stretch, they got help from, remember, Georgetown beat Creighton. Hey, that's great. Alabama beat Auburn. Oh, that's great. Syracuse beat Virginia. Wow, that's great. But let's go back to what I said as they were getting ready for Ohio State. I said the bottom line is, yes, they're getting help in these sectors right here, but Penn State needs to help itself. I said it straight out. Penn State needs to help itself. They've won 5 in a row. They've helped themselves, helped themselves, helped themselves, helped themselves, helped themselves. And they have to keep helping themselves. They have to keep helping themselves. All right. We did talk baseball today with Bob Nightingale, USA Today. Another great conversation with him. We talked about Chris Bryant. Supposedly the Phillies have some interest in Chris Bryant. I would not mortgage that. And Bob and I were really on the same page. The suit was willing to give up 8 farmhands plus cash to get him.
Something like that.
And we're like, nah, I don't think so. No. No. Again, he is a player that has tremendous, I mean, you watch him in terms of the baseball tools of hitting and hitting with power and so forth. He whets the appetite, but you just feel like at the end of a month and then by an all-star game and then by the season, you're wanting more. You keep saying there's something missing. Feel like there's something missing. It's just like it's you can see that it can happen, but it doesn't happen consistently enough with him. I think in Philadelphia he would be a frustrating guy for you guys. Great talent who has great potential. But my goodness, you just don't feel like he's fulfilling it. Yeah, sometimes it's just the way it is with some guys. You just get to a certain point. I'm not. So we talked about that today, and we talked about the Mookie Betts trade, and we discussed the Astros. It's going to be interesting to see how pitchers handle the Astros, especially early in the season. Will they throw at him?
Definitely think that's a major possibility.
I mean, well, we had that father-son softball game. The suit was throwing at suit light. It was bad. I'm like, that's, I mean, are you going to coach your son in Little League and in sports if he wants to play sports? Like basketball, soccer,
I don't know if I would be a head coach.
Baseball?
Uh-huh. I don't know if I really will have the time based on my schedule of stuff that I do now. But B, I don't know if I really want that responsibility anyway, knowing what I do for a living, how parents can be sometimes. But I think being an assistant coach would be fun.
I never once had 14 years I coached between, 14 years of Little League, Babe Ruth ball, basketball as well. 14 years I coached. And I not one time, zero, had a problem with a parent. Never.
Well, that's good to hear.
Zero. Not one. All the parents were great. I will say this, though. After doing it for 14 years, it was one of those that usually when I finish something, like, for example, I was finished with college. I've never had the, some people, I miss my college days. I'm like, I don't miss my college days. When I was done, I was done. Same thing with this. As soon as I was done. Remember the last game I coached, and my son Christopher was the one who was playing at the time. He was 12 years old. He didn't want to play anymore past 13, or past 12, which is fine. So I'm coaching the game. And we're in the last inning, and we're down by one. And we get a youngster on first base. So finally, it turns out that, it didn't turn out well, because, you want to win. The reason you want to win is not because you want to win. You want to win so that the kids win. You know what I mean? That way they can walk out of there feeling good, whatever. Well, they didn't win. So my wife asked him, she says, so, you're standing down there at third base. He says, what did it feel like knowing it was like the last inning you were ever going to coach down there? And I said, well, we had a runner on first. So I was trying to decide, should I steal him? Should I try a hit and run? I said, I was trying to figure out how to get him around so we could get him home. She says, that's what you were thinking? I said, yeah. I said, what am I supposed to be thinking about? I said, I was trying to do it in such a way where the kids could maybe win the game and feel good about it. He said, that's it? I said, what do you think of that? Like, I'm going to really miss this.
No. You don't think about that till afterwards anyway.
I didn't even think about it afterward. I was like, yeah, we're done.
Once you're in game, you got to be focused on the game.
I was trying to figure out because, we got him on base. I'm like, okay, there's only one out. Do I want to steal him? Well, the reason I didn't steal him is I thought the catcher was really good. I didn't want to bunt. I actually thought about that, but it turned out the youngster at the plate was not a very good bunter. I'll tell you one of the toughest ones. It's one of the toughest ones. I was coaching. Was it Babe Ruth ball? No, it was Little League. It was Little League. And I had a youngster on the team who was autistic. What a great kid. Great father. I mean, great family, great parents. But he was slightly autistic, slightly. Okay? So I'm trying to figure out a way to, give him some semblance of success or at least keep him from not having success. Well, he really wanted to play second base. So I put him at second base. I mean, like I said, I'm out there, you're trying to teach things and so forth. I'm out there not trying to, let's win this game, let's go. All right. Luke, you stink. And all of a sudden, I got the Cotrillo family in my face. What's going on? All right. So I'm trying to put him in a position so he could succeed. Because that's really that was always the primary goal. Teach them, allow them to get better, but put them in every possible position to succeed. Those were the goals. And when so I put him at second base because he really wanted to play there. I was like, okay, let's just do it. First pitch hit to him, I'm like, oh, jeez. And of course, when it's hit to him, as soon as the ball's hit to him, you're hoping he makes the play because it would be so good for him. Right? It's not that we're going to give up whatever. Whatever we give up, we give up. I didn't really care. Right? It's like, oh, no. Goes through his legs. Second guy goes up through his legs. Third guy goes up. They're all hitting it right at him. I'm like, oh, no. So finally we get out of the inning. And I told him, hey, look, hey, good job. You just get down to the ball. Right? It'll be okay. He goes, okay, Mr. Jones, okay. Do you want to talk about it? Awesome kid. So then the second inning, I decide, you know what? Okay, let's put him in right field. I'll put somebody else at second base, but I'm going to keep him in the game. That way he can bat. Now, instead of hitting the ball on the ground a second, they're now lifting the ball in the air to right field. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. That's a, all right. And again, it has nothing to do with what we're giving up here. I felt so awful for the guy. So we get to the third inning, and so since everything's been hit the second base, everything's been hit the right field, what do you think I do?
Put him back a second? Oh, you take him out. Okay.
No, I didn't take him out.
Oh.
I put him in. No, I'm not going to take him out. I want him to hit. Okay? That way, and he actually got a hit in this game. God love him.
Oh, good.
Right?
All right.
Right? He did. Right? I put him in left field. That way, everything's been hit to the right, so I put him in left field. Right? Just so he could have a clean inning. And they hit three balls to left field. I looked at the assistant coach. I said, does he have a magnet? I said, and the other coach looks at me and says, Steve, I know you're doing everything you can, so everything's cool here. I said, I couldn't believe it. Well, we went through the whole season, all right? Yeah, and the record of the team wasn't great, whatever. But, all those kids, it was over. They all signed a ball, and they gave it to me. I stole the ball. Every once in a while, I see him now. And every time he sees me, he comes up and hugs me.
That's an awesome story.
I mean, every single time. I love that kid. He's just the nicest, hardworking. It just turned out, it wasn't his bag. But he was out there trying, and he was out there running around, and he was out there giving it everything he had. And guess what? You know how his teammates were with him? They were awesome with him.
Oh, good.
Rooting for him, the whole thing. It'll be not one negative thing. That team had no negative anything all season. Nothing. It's just, I just wanted him to have some success. And that's how I felt about all of them. That's how I felt about all of them. I mean, I did have one kid scream at me once because I didn't put him on the All-Star team. And I said, James, I said, you're 3-for-27 in the season. How do you want me to handle this? Well, you're trying to screw me. I said, James, you're 3-for-27. I said, do you want me to take out the calculator? All right, so I'm not hitting well. I said, that's why it's an All-Star team, James. I said, I appreciate what you're saying here, but... I said, it's kind of hard to walk in there and, like, convince the other coaches, here's the moment. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay, wrapping it up for today. Great to have you with us. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Looking forward to it here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.